fear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello, and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, delighted to welcome along BBC Sports Scott Mullen to discuss the last two Motherwell fixtures, a game against Celtic, half a game against Kilmarnock, and then we eventually finished it yesterday. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers. How
Jay, I'll start as always with yourself, and we'll start with the most recent Kilmarnock game. Managed to get the 90 minutes in yesterday. A 0-0 draw in the end. I kind of wish we had just actually given up and called it 0-0 on Wednesday night, because it was an absolutely turgid 90 minutes of football and played in very difficult conditions as well, it must be said.
I think that's it. You know, it was a pretty poor game overall, but I think, you know, the conditions were so bad that, you know, that was the reason. In terms of, you know, the wind. I know there was obviously torrential rain near the end of the game, but the wind was absolutely ridiculous. Just simple passes, you know, going astray. Yeah, it just made for a really, really poor game. You know, the pitch probably doesn't help either. We all know that there's been quite a lot of discussion, particularly recently, about plastic pitches and how poor they are for Scottish football. And I think when you combine that with the wind and then the heavy rain near the end of the game, it was just always going to be a case of, if either side was going to nick the win, it was probably just going to be an error or a little bit of luck with maybe the wind catching a shot or something like that. I think overall the draw was probably fair. I think, you know, in amongst the kind of 90 minute shit fest, there was you know, the odd chance for each side. So yeah, I think you've got to look at it as a good point against a, you know, a good Kilmarnock side. They've got a lot of good players. They've obviously had a, you know, a great season so far. Steve Clark's done a fantastic job there. So to go there, play in those conditions, I know the conditions are the same for both teams, but to go to, you know, play in that plastic pitch, play in those conditions and come back with a point, I think it's a very, very good point. And despite a poor 90 minutes, I think it's a point that we should all be very pleased with.
Scott, it wasn't a good game. There's no getting away from that. And the decision, though, to postpone the game at just after half-time on Wednesday night, I think we all agree was the right decision as well. Just a wee bit more on the pitch, though. For me, that artificial surface at Kilmarnock is almost threadbare. It's very, very poor. The ball doesn't bounce true. And it's not really conducive for good football, is it?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because Kilmarnock, as far as I'm aware, are going to replace it this summer. I'm assuming with another plastic pitch. So it's maybe becoming to the end of its life cycle and doesn't quite have the 25 million rubber pellets that the one at Livingston has. But I mean, the frustrating thing for me watching the game on Wednesday and watching the game yesterday was the game on Wednesday, I thought Motherwell went into half-time the far better team. They were growing into the match. They were creating more chances than Kilmarnock had. And you did get a feeling on Wednesday night that Motherwell had a real chance to get 3 points. I agree with what Jay was saying yesterday. I thought a point apiece was the fair result. But I can't help but feeling that Wednesday was the one that got away, and I hope that it doesn't come back to haunt Motherwell if they're trying to get into the top six within the next few weeks. Because, as I said, Wednesday, after a ropey start, I thought Tom Aldred looked terrific. He would have headed a breeze block if it was put in front of him on Wednesday night. He was really, really good. And Motherwell, I thought, were really in the ascendancy when the fog started to come in. But we saw what Motherwell did when they went to Rugby Park earlier on this season, went 1-0 up, had a penalty chance to make it 2-0, made a mess of it, and then Kilmarnock came back and absolutely trounced them. So with that in the background, yeah, you've got to be content with it. And it's still a good springboard going into what is a tasty proposition with the Hamilton coming to Fir Park on Saturday.
Plus, with 50 minutes to go, I kind of felt that it was more about not losing the game. Mark Gillespie made a great save. I think it was from Eamon Brophy to keep it in 0-0. It's a good point in the grand scheme of things, isn't it? Because Rugby Park is not an easy place to go. Motherwell still haven't recorded a victory over a Steve Clark Kilmarnock side. So a point on our travels, it's a point that we'd have certainly celebrated possibly coming into 2019.
I think you're right there. It's been, as you say, Kilmarnock under Steve Clark have been very difficult and frustrating for us. A few times at Firth Park, I thought we were a better team against them, but you know they've come away with 1-0 wins. The one where Stephen O'Donnell scored really sticks out for me like that. But you know, as you say, a draw away at Kilmarnock isn't something to be sniffed at, especially you know as the last year or whatever it is, they've been pretty high flying. I think they're about 10, 12 points ahead of us at the moment. So you know, and a wee draw there. Isn't a bad result, but you know, as you mentioned, it was an absolutely honking game. I've seen some people comment on it saying, "Ah, for all it was, you know, for a 0-0, it wasn't a bad game." I thought the exact opposite, to be honest with you. I don't think I even got a fiver's worth of entertainment out of it, to be fair. But you know, as I say, point apiece was probably the fairest result considering. And as you say, the win certainly played its part, but a draw's not to be sniffed at.
Jay Buster mentioned the £5 the entry fee. That was after Kilmarnock announced the plans for the rearranged fixture, charging fans that had already been there. 650 Motherwell fans attended the game on Wednesday. They were then subsequently charged again to go to the game yesterday. Motherwell have honoured the 650 fans that were there and paid for their entry to the game yesterday. But a massive PR on goal from Kilmarnock there, particularly when you consider the cost involved to them.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations where, you know, on the basics, you know, the idea that, okay, a fiver for everybody to get in, you know, it's maybe not a big deal on the, you know, the grand scheme of things. You know, a fiver isn't a lot of money. It is to a lot of people, but to the people that the fiver is a lot of money, they're probably not making any, you know, bold plans to go to, you know, Motherwell away games anyway. You know, a fiver across the board on the face of it isn't necessarily, you know, a bad thing, but that needs to be the procedure then that Kilmarnock have. You know, if Kilmarnock have it in their terms and conditions that if you go along to a game at Rugby Park and the game's abandoned for whatever reason, you will get into the rematch for, you know, a fiver across the board, then at least you know where you stand. At least if you go to that game, you know that you are paying, you know, 25 quid or whatever, with a chance that if it is abandoned, you know, you won't get in for the rematch for nothing. But I think it's just a bit of a clusterfuck from Kilmarnock, to be honest. You know, it wasn't as though they made the decision there and then that, okay, the rematch will be a fiver across the board. Instead, they were handing out vouchers. When they ran out, they were taking details from people. I know there was fans who were hanging about for a good 30, 40 minutes just to give their details to someone at Kilmarnock to ensure that they could get into the rearranged game for nothing. So to then, you know, just it's just very lazy, I think, to then turn round and say, okay, everybody's paying a fiver. I think you're penalising the people who made the effort. And you know, I suppose in a way you're sort of giving a wee bit of a bonus to those who didn't. So I think it's the principle of it. I know a lot of Kelly fans were saying, well, it's only a fiver, but it's the principle of it, because you're treating fans who made the effort and paid the money on Wednesday, you're treating them unfairly. And that's something that we shouldn't be seeing in Scottish football, particularly Scottish football. You know, we're always banging on about attendances, we're always banging on about things like the ice hockey and, you know, how they, you know, make the experience of the day out, you know, so much better, and what we can be doing in Scottish football to attract folk around along and make them feel worthwhile. And when you treat fans like that, I think, you know, that starts to put people off. So it's the principle behind it. But you're right. I mean, it's both a PR own goal for Kilmarnock, and it's, you know, a sitter for Motherwell, because, you know, Motherwell come out, they say that they're going to, you know, refund the fiver to the fans who went on Wednesday night. And let's be honest, the 99% of those who went on Wednesday night aren't going to make the effort to go to Firth Park for a fiver. So Motherwell don't necessarily lose any money out of it, but come out of the whole thing, you know, looking fantastic. And that's, of course, a great thing for us, you know, a fan-owned club looking after its fans. It's brilliant. But it just seems also unnecessary. And it's been a bit of a PR disaster for Kilmarnock on that side of it.
I think it also sets a bit of a dangerous precedent there. You know, like, as you say, throughout the years, other than maybe when Dundee United, you know, screwed over Rangers, it's always been a sort of an agreement where the game's abandoned, you get in for nothing with your wee voucher that you get dished out. But, you know, somebody who is maybe not wanting to lose out in money, you know, come next Christmas, next winter, whenever, maybe even March, you know, if we get a bad spell of weather again, or they just have to say, well, you know, it's been done before, so we'll take a fiver, we'll take a tenner, whatever, you know, nice and easy, half price, whatever.
Scott, Kilmarnock were very quiet following the announcement of the plans. As Jay mentioned, it was an open goal for Motherwell to kind of almost clarify the situation and do the right thing by their own supporters. I just can't really get my head around that the £22 a head on Wednesday night for adults, they've already got their money. There's a massive, massive gap there between what it would have cost them to refund a maximum of £5 a head for the game yesterday. And kind of added on to that as well, not many people would actually go through at 2 days' notice to go and claim back their £5. It just seems really, really basic and really, really disappointing, and a lack of kind of understanding of football supporters. Of course, Kilmarnock had costs yesterday, but they turned over a great deal of money, particularly when they're charging away supporters £22 to go to the game. Another thing that kind of rankled with me was the fact that Kilmarnock season ticket holders got in for free yesterday. So yeah, they looked after their own.
That was the thing that looked
after the away supporters.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that jarred with me. Certainly, whenever news started to break on Thursday that they were going to do this, that season ticket holders' vouchers were valid, but the vouchers of everybody else weren't. I think I've spoken to various people, both in and outside both clubs in this, and from what I understand is that stewards were giving away more vouchers than there were people at the games. So I think they get... One person quoted to me that they gave away 10,000 tickets. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I've not clarified that with Kilmarnock. But that may lend itself to a reason as to why Kilmarnock started to backpedal a little bit. However, to be honest, I still don't buy that, because even if they did give away 10,000 tickets and 10,000 people turned up, they have 10,000 people in their stadium buying 50-50 tickets, buying programmes, buying pies, cakes, juice, Motherwell Empire biscuits, whatever you want to do with it. You're going to have more people in the ground, which they should be happy about that. But it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, as you said, it was a PR disaster, and I think I said that at the time, from Motherwell, who are getting quite good at this PR lark with Grant and Alan and Charles, that it was a bit of an open goal for them. And I know that they were keen to make sure the Motherwell fans weren't out of pocket. But I mean, it goes a long, long way. I mean, how much would that have cost Motherwell to do that and refund all those fivers on Saturday? About £3,000-£4,000. In the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot of money, but it's a lot of goodwill. And you'll probably see more people coming on Saturday to the Hamilton Accies game in the back of it. Kilmarnock, it's not the best, especially they've not been in a great run recently. You would have thought they would want to keep their fans on side, especially when it emerged that the reason that they didn't want to play this weekend is because they were going to Tenerife. It just makes it sound as if they're trying to recoup the money for having to move their flight. I understand. I think they flew out on Sunday morning instead. It leaves a bad taste in the mouth, certainly. But from a Motherwell point of view, they did everything right, but they seem to be doing a lot right in terms of that, whether it's fan engagement or kind of suicide prevention or just reaching out into the community. It's what they should be all about doing. I was surprised with Kilmarnock, because I thought they would be taking a different stance, and certainly after Motherwell came out and said that they would be refunding everybody's fiver, I thought that might move Kilmarnock into doing the same, but it didn't look as if it happened.
Jay, I suppose on the other hand, 650 Motherwell supporters there on Wednesday, that figure increased to over 1,500 for yesterday's game, an opportunity for some fans that they can't regularly go because it was a wee bit cheaper. It was only, I think it was £7 return in the train from Glasgow yesterday as well into Kilmarnock. So it was an affordable away day. It's a shame they didn't get a better game, but certainly a very healthy turnout from the Motherwell supporters yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think what this kind of whole debate does is throw up two talking points. You've got the idea of the principle behind Kamarnock making that decision, but you also have the separate sort of point regarding attendances and gate prices and, you know, encouraging people along, and you're completely correct. You know, I think it was £7.50 for my return ticket to Kamarnock and then a fiver to get in. Now, I'm not suggesting that that would even be feasible across the board, but when you factor in, you know, at times, I mean, how often have Motherwell been, you know, you're gearing up for an away day to Inverness or Aberdeen or Dundee, and you go onto ScotRail website and find out it's going to cost you more to get a train there than it would to get a flight to Barcelona. You know, so there's a bigger point here, and it's the fact that, you know, when travel prices and gate prices are appealing and are affordable, punters will turn out. You know, I think the total attendance was about 6,500, which, you know, Kamarnock are aside that get very similar attendances to ourselves, and I think 6,500 for a Kamarnock versus Motherwell game is a really, really good encouraging attendance. And of course it's down to the fact that the gate prices were what they were. So, you know, as much as we can obviously discuss it, you know, and have at length about how it was a poor move by Kamarnock, it does highlight the fact that when football's affordable, there is interest there. There are people willing to go. And I think it even throws up, you know, the very fact that we're, you know, discussing the combination of the travel cost and the gate price, it throws up those, you know, the conversations that, you know, I think it's Germany where you can get free travel with your match ticket and things like that. You know, if that was something that started to be a wee bit more freely available in Scotland, and you know, your actual, you know, your basic costs in terms of travel and gate price were still going to be under £20, I think, you know, far more people are going to make that journey because it suddenly becomes value for money. I know Buster doesn't think so. He got a fiver worth of entertainment out of it. But I think fans will respond to that. And I think, you know, that's another point to have come from yesterday.
Just to pick up on that, Jay, there's something that I'm still amazed that clubs don't do it. That certainly there's, you'd think that clubs like Motherwell, St Johnstone, Kilmarnock, St Mirren, even Hamilton would do a kind of ticket alliance that if one of their season ticket holders turns up at your ground for an away game with their season ticket, they get in for a tenner, and they offer to reciprocate that when at the reverse fixture. I don't understand why clubs don't do it, because surely you would get more people going, and it's a sign of goodwill, and it's a way of trying to make away trips affordable. Like you say, going to Inverness, the thing that puts you off going to Inverness, it's not the 3-hour journey or the fact that the ground's not very good or the match day experience is rubbish. It's the fact that it's going to cost you 50, 60 quid to get there on the train. Then you're going to have to pay 25 quid when you're in. It's an expensive day out. And these kind of things that I'm surprised clubs don't make more of a deal of. You mentioned there the ice hockey, that they do make it as a fan experience, whereas the fan experience at clubs, at grounds across the country, really have a long way to go. I know Motherwell have tried to do other stuff, but there's still improvement there to be made. But I don't understand why there's not more initiatives to bring it to make ticket prices cheaper, to try and encourage more people to go. Because we've seen, I mean, Motherwell this season have got the biggest season ticket holder base that the club's ever had, because they've brought the tickets down. They've given away free kids season tickets as well. And at home attendances are up. I mean, the home attendance at Fir Park this season, excluding away fans, hasn't really dropped, to my knowledge, really below 4,000 all season. Maybe a little bit whenever the team weren't doing great at kind of start of December. But 4,000 Motherwell fans week in, week out, I think is really, really healthy. And in general, they've got a healthy away support as well. But in my experience of watching Motherwell and Scottish football over the last 25 years, home attendances at clubs, I don't think, have really gone down. It's travelling supports. I remember Kilmarnock used to bring 2,500 at Fir Park in the mid-90s. That's what you're missing. You need to try and encourage people to travel with their teams if you really want attendances to go back up across Scotland.
I'm pretty sure that we did something like that with Dundee United, I think, a couple of years ago.
I tend to remember we had something with Hearts.
Maybe that's what it was, but we definitely did do something like that. I don't think it was anything to do with season tickets at that point. I think it was maybe just a case of, tell you what, we'll let your fans in for 15 quid if you do the same for us, and they went, I ain't bother. So I'm pretty sure something like that did happen again maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But as you said there, Scott and all, I think me and Jay had the conversation a couple of weeks ago, I think it was one of the games where you look back to videos of Motherwell at Ibrox or Parkhead in the 90s, and you know that away section is full, probably 1,500, 2,000 Motherwell fans. Whereas, you know, we went to Parkhead the other week there and I think got pretty close to selling out our allowance. But again, it was maybe 700, 800 fans rather than what you'd see in these old highlights for the 90s.
Yeah, it's certainly a very expensive game to follow. There's no doubt. I think maybe even going back to last season, I'm pretty sure we had a deal with Aberdeen where fans could get reduced entry if they were season ticket holders. I guess it's more about rewarding your own supporters and those that invest ahead of the season and loyally put their money in. That was kind of backed up by the fact that Motherwell did compensate the 650 that went on Wednesday night. And as I say, I don't know how many people took Motherwell up in that, but certainly Motherwell have come out of this looking very, very good, whereas I think Kilmarnock have looked pretty amateurish in the whole thing as well. And the fact that there was terms and conditions on their website that they seem to go directly against, it's not great. It's not a great look, and just completely ignoring the situation and getting on with the game possibly doesn't really reflect that great on Killy as a whole. We'll rewind back to last Sunday and the 4-1 defeat against Celtic. Jay, the game, it certainly wasn't just your run-of-the-mill 4-1 defeat at Parkhead, was it? certainly plenty of talking points, and one in particular that will certainly stand out.
Yeah, it was quite something. I have never ever experienced seethe to that magnitude inside a football stadium, I think, ever in my life going to games. It was incredible. And actually, you know, I'm still very, very surprised at, the nature of the Motherwell goal. I'm still very, very surprised at just how much it rattled the Celtic players. Every single Celtic player. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it's important to talk up our performance in that second half after we scored. We did go on and dominate possession of the ball for long periods, but I think we also need to factor in that a lot of that was down to the Celtic players being absolutely rattled by our goal. And, you know, you're talking about guys who are on 10, 20 grand a week and are supposed to be, you know, Champions League, you know, level or aspiring to be Champions League players. You know, if I was a Celtic fan, I would be genuinely quite concerned about the way the Celtic players responded to our goal mentally. But yeah, I mean, it's probably been done to death, but the actual outrage and the aftermath was absolutely pathetic. You know, I think we need to be realistic and recognise that had we conceded a goal like that, we would all be going absolutely mental. So I don't really have much issue there. For what it's worth, being, you know, we're football fans, so we're hypocrites because it happened, you know, in our favour. I absolutely lapped up the 20-25 minutes of Seath. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, thoroughly entertaining, and well worth the restricted view ticket price. But yeah, the aftermath was just ridiculous. You know, guys like Pat Bonner, Chris Sutton, Tom Boyd, you know, there's an obvious link between them all. But, you know, you would think that James Scott had shot somebody. It was absolutely unreal. You know, social media absolutely full of Celtic fans, you know, an absolute outrage. It was pathetic because, you know, we're talking about a game, you know, a sport in Scotland where, you know, even just today, you've had Alfredo Morelos booked for diving in the box trying to win his team a penalty. You had McMullen at Dundee United going down far too easily and actually winning his team a penalty. And justice obviously been done with Inverness Cali getting a late winner. So these things happen all the time. There is no such thing as sportsmanship in Scottish football when you have players diving and players handling the ball and time-wasting and feigning injury and all the rest of it, to then get on your moral high ground and preach about giving the ball back. It's just pathetic. And I think I think the mask slipped for quite a few people, both fans and pundits, in the aftermath because, you know, there is being a hypocrite because you're a football fan. But then there's just, you know, absolutely unreal levels of hypocrisy. And to take such a moral high ground or such a moral stance for something that, yes, we should have gave them the ball back. I think it's important to note that Celtic should never have put it out in the first place because, you know, teams are guided, or the guidance is supposed to be that the referee is supposed to halt the game. The very fact Celtic put the ball out in the belief that they would get it back is technically them seeking to get an unfair advantage, because what should have happened was they should have continued playing with 10 men they didn't, because, you know, they decided we'll put the ball out because we'll probably get it back. So if anybody was seeking an unfair advantage at that stage, it was Celtic. We should have gave them the ball back. I don't think James Scott had a clue what was going on. But the actual outrage after it is absolutely pathetic, because there's so much wrong in Scottish football at the moment. If you want to have a serious conversation about sportsmanship, Scott Sinclair diving in the box, getting Kipre sent off and getting a vital penalty in a cup final. I didn't hear Brendan Rodgers or any of the Celtic fans at that stage suggesting that they should give us a goal on the back of that to level it up. You know, you've Alfredo Morelos trying to punch the ball into the net a few weeks ago, and you have guys like Billy Dodds, Alan Preston and Tom English on BBC Radio queuing up to defend them and claim that strikers do it all the time. You know, it's pathetic. Scottish football is absolutely rife with examples of poor sportsmanship, and to single out James Scott, you know, a young 18-year-old making his debut, to single that out simply because it was against Celtic, which is essentially what we're talking about here. Because let's be honest, if it happened against Kilmarnock yesterday instead, it would have been a fleeting mention on Sports Scene, and that would have been it. It's been completely played over the top simply because it was against Celtic, and the whole thing's a bit of a farce. And it just so happened we would probably still be getting absolutely bombarded with it if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, Brendan had pissed off down south the next day.
Must I, Jay can be added to that list of pundits who haven't placed any sort of blame on Jamalé Aribe, who eventually put the ball into the net. It's quite incredible how he's just escaped any sort of attention for this.
What, we Teflon Bolly? Nothing sticks to him. To be fair, you know, that Jay's covered basically everything that everybody's been thinking for the last week there. But, you know, when you rolled around to me, I was going to say, Bolly Aribe has just ghosted in at the back post, slammed it into the net, run her, stood in front of the Green Brigade like that, yode, and the only person to have joined him was Christoph Ayer. Only him went to her and went, what's happening here? Everybody else was just fighting in the box. Bolly ran her in front of the Green Brigade and was just like, there you go, have that. And again, as I say, not one person even seems to have flagged up at any point. It's kind of unreal. Because, see, for example, if James Scott had hit that shot and then, you know, Aribe had followed it in and had a think about it and just booted it out the park, he'd be getting plaudits for being the greatest sportsman on earth, probably. But, you know, he slammed it into the net and not one person's even mentioned it. It's kind of amazing, to be fair.
Scott, this is possibly a question that you won't answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Tom Boyd is rather outspoken when it comes to all things Celtic, and it's certainly not an endearing quality that it has, particularly as a Motherwell supporter and as a 1991 cup winning captain. He's certainly burnt quite a lot of bridges with a lot of his comments, hasn't he?
It certainly seems that way. I was in work last Sunday whenever the game was taking place, and the feed we were getting into the office was Tom Boyd and from Celtic, and It was something else. To be fair, what I found interesting, I think Tom English flagged this up in SportsSound the other week, is that there was a game in the mid-90s between Celtic and Raith Rovers where Celtic did exactly the same thing and Tom Boyd played in it, which seems to have kind of gone unnoticed. There was a level of hypocrisy there, and certainly with Tom Boyd, I think this isn't a recent thing with Tom. I mean, certainly any dealings I've had with him, I've always found him okay. I found him absolutely fine. But there does seem to be this thing that he is very open with of where he leans whenever Celtic play Motherwell. To be fair, he has been paid by Celtic to appear on Celtic TV. I wouldn't really expect him to be anything else. But going back to my own personal thoughts on it, I thought it was... I thought Brendan Rodgers made a lot of it. Considering in the grand scheme of things, it didn't make any difference to the outcome of the game. If that goal had turned it and Motherwell had come back and won 3-2, because as Jay said, Celtic did look really rattled for a good 15, 20 minutes. If it made a difference, I could maybe understand them going in as kind of strongly as he did. A cynic would say that he was just doing so because he wanted to try and deflect from what was going on with the Leicester situation. I don't know, because I know he was asked about the Leicester job after the game and walked out in the interview, as well as he was asked about it beforehand. I just felt as if, you know, the boys quite clearly made a mistake. You can tell when Liam Grimshaw's throwing the ball back in, Grimmy threw the ball in and went to walk away because he wasn't anticipating it was going to happen. It's not as if it was choreographed. It was something that James Scott, I think, maybe just wasn't paying attention as to why the ball went out in the first place. And he will learn from it. He's still not spoken in the media. He's still not spoken to anybody. I have tried, but it's still a wee bit early for it. I do feel sorry for the boy because I genuinely think if he realised what was going on in the circumstances, he wouldn't have done it. But I don't think it's right to kind of hang the boy out to dry on the back of a goal that ultimately it didn't make any difference to it. I think Jay might have pointed it as well. When I was watching it, I mean, you could tell Ryan Christie, who was the player that they kicked the ball out for, Ryan Christie went down a little bit before it, then 2 minutes later get back up and then signalled that he was done. He was still able to walk from, somebody will no doubt correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure he still managed to walk off the park. So technically, he could have walked off the park without Celtic putting the ball out. They didn't need to do that. The ball was only going out really to get somebody on, which it's a bit of a grey area. And as I said, it's just unfortunate. But I think James Scott can count himself unfortunate for the amount of flack that he got. Yeah, I'm not surprised that he got a lot of attention. I can understand that, and I agree. In my job, I no matter what game it was at, whether it was Kilmarnock, Motherwell, or Celtic Rangers, or whoever it was, I think it's worth highlighting because it's so quirky and so unusual. But hopefully it won't scar the boy too much because he's, by all accounts, he's a good talent. He's not long signed his new deal, and you don't want him to get derailed by something like this.
See, in the back of what you said there as well, Scott, the, as you say, Christie had sort of went down. I couldn't really see, probably because of the pole, but I'm led to believe he went on and off the park as well. Then when he was back on, Celtic could continue to attack at that point. The attack then broke down, and that was when they got the ball back at the centre-halves, and whoever it was then kicked the ball out. So to talk about, and again, as I say, I know we would be raging if it happened to us, but to talk about, you know, sportsmanship and stuff, things like that, it was like only once they then realised their chance to score had sort of was starting again. You know, they thought, we can start again anyway, let's kick it out now. So it's a bit hypocritical for them as well to have continued their attack, and then when it's, you know, come back to them to start again, then decided, fair dues, we'll kick this out and we'll actually get again that man replaced. So get it right up them anyway.
Jay, I know obviously our podcast focuses in Motherwell and nothing else really, but the departure of Brendan Rodgers certainly has been a massive, massive story in Scottish football, and I think it has kind of affected us all. It's just got managed to see him off, wasn't it? Because basically what has happened here is James Scott has demonstrated a bit of gamesmanship, and Brendan Rodgers has been so infuriated by it that he's had to go to Leicester.
Well, that is the single greatest canny take it of all time. Absolutely. Although, I mean, it's worth pointing out, I found the actual backlash to it for Celtic fans hilarious. I mean, you ask any non-Celtic fans, after about 6 months, I mean, Brendan Rodgers rolled into town, spent about 6 months actually doing a pretty good job of talking up Scottish football. It was a bit of a breath of fresh air. But after that 6 months, it was like a big heel turn. And I think every single non-Celtic fan in Scotland could tell you he was completely two-faced. I mean, the perfect example is when, you know, he would constantly come out telling us how he does not talk about other teams' players. He's too professional for that. Well, in the same breath, slating Ryan Bowman for, you know, his elbow in the semi-final. So, you know, everybody in Scotland knows how two-faced he is. It's just been quite a surprise it took, you know, last week for Celtic fans to realise it.
Yeah, I would go as far as saying he was a detestable David Brent cretin. Good riddance to him. And I actually had a real smirk to myself when I saw Watford had scored in the 92nd minute to beat them today. I wish him really mediocrity when he's down south, and hopefully he ends up back as, I don't know, their growth manager or something like that.
Camden Sparrow, you sound like a Celtic fan, Sparrow.
It's probably worth me putting my tuppence worth in here and as a disclaimer saying this is my opinion and not of the BBC. But even so, I must admit, I'll disagree with you guys to an extent and say that I was actually quite sad to see him go because in any dealings I've had with him, I don't know him personally, but any dealings or interviews I've had with him, I've actually found him always generally to be all right and quite personable. But more in a kind of broader sense, I thought that him being up here, and particularly Steven Gerrard this year, raised the profile of Scottish football. I know fans of Motherwell and other kind of provincial clubs always kind of roll their eyes that it's always Rangers and Celtic that get all the attention, that they tend to take the limelight away from everybody else, which can often be the case, particularly with kind of people looking into Scotland from the outside. But I think having him here as Celtic manager certainly heightened the profile of Scottish football, and in that sense I think it is a loss. Appreciate this is a Motherwell podcast and Motherwell fans won't give a monkeys, but in terms of general Scottish football, having him here over the last 2-3 years undoubtedly has raised the profile, has got Celtic into the Champions League a couple of times, coefficient has gone up as well over the last couple of years. I think Scotland are now up to 19th in the coefficient, and if they get to 15th they get another European place. So I think it has made a difference. It'll be interesting now to see what happens with Celtic if they do stick with Neil Lennon or whether they get somebody else in. But certainly from a media point of view, I know that BBC our figures have gone up and swelled since Brendan Rodgers and Gerrard have both been here. So in that sense, I think it will be a miss. But you guys are perfectly entitled to disagree with me, which I'm sure you will.
See, to be honest with you, I don't necessarily disagree. You've made very valid points, and as you say, you know, you've got the stats with the BBC to back them up. But I think, like Jay said, you know, the first six months he was here, he was saying all the right things. You know, he was talking Scottish football up brilliantly, and it's then as if somebody whispered in his ear, "Here, mate, why don't you start towing the party line?" And he then became a typical sort of Celtic fan, basically. But you know, as I say, that's only my opinion. Whether or not anybody else agrees with that, fair enough. But I think you do make a valid point about people maybe showing a bit more interest. And I would honestly, although it would pain me to say it as well, I think that's maybe more a Steven Gerrard thing than a Brendan Rodgers thing, to be fair. But again, as I say, I think you make a good point there about that.
I think Gerrard and Rodgers against one another would make a big difference. I think there was a big it was box office the two of them going against one another certainly helped, but it would have been good to see him here a little bit longer, in my personal opinion, but we're just now going to have to keep an eye on him from a distance at Leicester.
There's certainly one thing that he's not going to be accused of just now, and that's been a Celtic supporter, I guess. That's although Buster was able to accuse me of being one, but it does actually take us on to another point in the that is Roger Mitchell and his outspoken ways on Twitter in the last couple of weeks. I kind of don't want to go into it too much because I actually think giving this guy the time of day is possibly a mistake. But the accusation, Jay, that every team in the hierarchy of every team in Scotland has a "we are the people" mentality is quite honestly the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my existence, particularly given that the majority of us all, when Rangers had the financial indiscretions, voted them down to the lowest tier of Scottish football. There clearly isn't that mindset. Alan Burrows took the bait, and I think that is possibly what Roger Mitchell's intentions were. I see that it's been reignited again today, although we can't actually see what Roger Mitchell is saying because Buster was particularly insulting to him and he's blocked us in every form of social media.
Only from my own account.
Well, he still blocked us as a result of this. I don't know whether I would use the word dinosaur, but it's maybe not right because he seems to be quite savvy in the sense that he knows what he's doing. He knows that he'll garner a reaction from what he's doing as well.
Yeah, but I think that's it. I mean, you know, I can safely say, obviously I can't speak for other, you know, other clubs, but, you know, being in the Welsh Society board and therefore, you know, often being in meetings with the actual, you know, the guys who are on the Motherwell club board, I can safely say that there is absolutely no leaning either way to Rangers and Celtic. I don't think anybody be any surprise at that, but there's absolutely no leanings whatsoever at Fir Park. And I think we can safely say that, you know, at most clubs, it's an absolute nonsense. Now, I don't know whether, you know, he genuinely believes that that is a, you know, that exists. I would love to see his proof, because as you say, you know, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, Rangers were kicked out of the top flight, and you know, that wouldn't have happened if what he was saying was true. I perhaps think he's just trying to keep himself relevant. I'm not sure what he's up to these days. It seems to be quite a controversial point he's trying to make, and often, you know, the cynic in me often, you know, thinks that there's maybe a wee bit of an underhand reason for that. Perhaps he just wants to get his name back in the papers and make himself feel as though he's an important part of Scottish football again. I'm really not sure. But of course, it's a nonsense. And to be honest, if we're going to have a serious discussion about cracking down on sectarianism, which, you know, is obviously all over the papers again, I think his kind of view is part of the problem rather than the solution. If our response to discussions about Rangers and Celtic and about sectarianism and about all that kind of thing is to, you know, build up that us versus them mentality, you know, because we've all had it. You know, if you're not one of us, then you must be one of them. If he is, you know, actually suggesting that exists, not just in, or not supposedly just in fan bases, but also within boardrooms, then he's, you know, almost stirring the problem. He's part of the problem rather than the solution. So, you know, I would like to think that we could actually just sort of move past it, ignore him, ignore views that are obviously nonsense. And hopefully it would just kind of vanish back into obscurity again.
Scott, I hope you've not interviewed him recently as well. And
no,
then
you're
going to, it might be an opportunity to give a case for the defence here. But I can't really... It's insulting. And let's not get away from the fact you're also a diehard Motherwell supporter yourself. It's insulting being accused of having leanings in other directions as well. People are allowed to support other teams other than the top two,
and you're right, it is insulting. And that's not to say that being a Rangers fan or a Celtic fan is something to that to, is an insult in itself. I'm married to a Celtic fan. I'm a bit I'll leave that
objection.
I'm married to a Celtic fan and my best mate's a Rangers fan, so you kind of roll with the punches. But it's, everybody's entitled to support who they want. And in terms of Motherwell, I agree with Jay. Everybody in that Motherwell, in Motherwell Football Club is Motherwell to the core. Even the ones who I would say weren't raised Motherwell fans, certainly everybody involved in the club has Motherwell at their heart, first and foremost. And to be honest, I would say that of any club I've had dealings with, even Celtic, Rangers, St Mirren, Hamilton, you know, people, it's the one thing that Scottish football has is personality and passion. You look at games down south in the Premier League that are filled with tourists taking pictures of opposition players and selfies and all this kind of stuff, and it breaks your heart. Then you come up here and it's just everybody is so passionate for the team that they either follow, they play for, they work for, or they're affiliated to. And to suggest that, you know, you're a Rangers fan with at the bus fare, or you really would rather go and watch Celtic, but you just can't afford to go to the game, or whatever else. That...
Can you remember where you were?
Not really, no. Just forget I ever said anything. I can't remember. Basically just saying that everybody, in my professional opinion and my personal opinion and experiences that I've had with Motherwell, Rangers, Celtic, whatever other club, that it does seem to me that everybody involved at whatever club they're affiliated with has the interests of that club at heart, and to suggest otherwise is just an utter nonsense.
Plus, it would be ignorant to ignore your opinion in this, basically because you've caused half of these problems and possibly... are the root source of his frustration. He was mentioning today to Alan Burrow's KPIs, almost as if, like, having an argument in public with Roger Mitchell benefits Motherwell, which is it's nearly as absurd as his original point. I fail to see where he's relevant. I fail to see why after 20 years he's decided to make these controversial points, other than the fact that he just wants to be noticed again. The guy's a bit of a pillock, isn't he?
Well, for the last 3 or 4 years, maybe, I noticed him on Twitter. And again, the first thing I noticed was how he was going on about he lives.
Problem you have anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He lives at Lake Como. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool, him living in Lake Como. But then when I started paying attention to his tweets, I never actually followed him, but you know, I'd seen him get retweeted or commented on, and I realised the guy was just a bell end. And I wouldn't constantly berate him, but anytime he said something, if I disagreed with it, I would tell him. And most of his opinions were utter wank, so it ended in me calling him a wank or something along those lines. So, as she says, do you know what? He's actually no worth the time, so let's just call him a wee specky wanker and move on.
He does join a bit of an illustrious list when it comes to you and people that have blocked you, though.
I prefer to think of the people who haven't blocked me and who actually follow me and my pals, like Michael Barrymore. You know, Michael Barrymore's a legend, isn't there?
There is more of a story than that, but we'll maybe cover that in another podcast. Although the one that I think we should focus on was the one where you claimed you were blind to Jay Lewis.
Again, that was just me trying to get the news before I had to watch the news. But Jane Lewis is a nice woman, though. She's not blocked me. I've not blocked her. I've never called her any names. As I say, I was just pretending I was blind so I couldn't read see the news or something like that.
There you go, Scott. You can rehash that when you meet her in the canteen tomorrow.
Jane's a lovely woman.
See, exactly.
Right, so we've come to the conclusion Roger Mitchell is a wank and Jane Lewis is lovely. Right, next week, Aki's and Scott it's a massive game for us. Like, we could never have ever envisaged the fact that we would be in a race for the top six, but we very much are. And going into the Hibs game the following week, we've very much got to record 3 points here against an Aki's team that got a very surprising result at Pittodrie. Their backs will be up. It's a Lanarkshire derby. It's a high-stakes game.
It is. And like you said, we never thought Motherwell would be in this position. If you go back even just to December, it was actually, to be fair, the last time that Motherwell played Aki's was the game that turned Motherwell's fortunes. That was the first win of the six-game winning streak. And to be fair, I was worrying for Motherwell going into that game. I have the fear every time they go to New Douglas Park or whatever they call it these days. But they managed to get a result and they really, really kicked on from there. I mean, looking at the league table, Motherwell are at the moment 37 points in 8th. Hibs are 6th on 41. So even by my poor maths, that's what, 4 points? I mean, you've got a really strong chance of doing something. There's still enough games left before the split. You've got, what, another 5 games? So it doesn't take that much. If Motherwell could beat Hamilton on Saturday and even get a draw at Easter Road, what a difference that would make going into how things finish. And don't forget, Hibs's next game's Rangers on Friday night. And then they're away at Livingston. They don't have an easy run-in over the next few games. It's there for Motherwell if they do make a good run of it. I'm curious to see what impact Ross McCormick's going to make. I'm surprised. I know he's got an injury at the moment. He's not featured more than he has done. It's maybe he's not been fit enough, I don't know. But hopefully over the next couple of weeks he can start to play a part, because I was really excited when Motherwell brought him in. I thought he was a really, really good sign to get on loan. A player with talent and a lot of skill. And I would like to see him used at some point over the next few weeks if he's fit. But certainly looking at next weekend, if Motherwell do the business again, Motherwell could be going into the game against Aki's knowing that potentially Hibs lost to Rangers the night before and that they could pull the gap down at 1 point if they really, really, really pushed the boat out. And I think I back Motherwell strongly. Against my better instincts, I back Motherwell strongly this weekend to get the result.
Jay, the performances at home since the turn of the year have been very, very positive. Undefeated in home soil in the league. A good result against Hearts last time out in the league as well. You would hope for the same positive approach. Scott mentioned Ross McCormack, which, despite the fact that we do make reference to Ross McCormack most weeks in the podcast, he is somewhat the forgotten man. Curtis Main was frustrating yesterday, to say the least. I think all of us completely agreed with the decision to replace him with James Scott. I would personally prefer to see James Scott in from the start next week, but it is quite good having the likes of Connor Salmon, Ross McCormack, should he be fit, on the sidelines, ready to come in for guys that aren't performing. And I dare I say that Curtis Main is the only guy in that starting 11, a starting 11 that has been fairly regular since the turn of the year, that is underperforming just now.
I'm not sure if I'd agree with that. I think he's done a pretty decent job in that lone striker role. He's certainly, you know, I don't think we're perhaps blessed with forwards who can play. It's a very sort of specialised position when you're obviously leading the line and you've got out and out wingers on either side of you. It takes particular, you know, not just physical attributes, but the, you know, your reading of the game, your ability to bring the wingers into, you know, the game, hold the ball up, all those kind of things. And I actually think Curtis Main played a big, big part in our six, you know, our run of six wins. Yes, he's perhaps not hit the net as much as we would have liked him to, and we have had to rely on the likes of Turnbull and Hasty putting the ball in the net. But I thought Main did a perfectly good job during those six games. He was obviously dropped at Celtic Park, so there's no judgment to be made there. And as much as I did feel that he was relatively poor yesterday, I think, you know, having just had a conversation earlier about how dire the pitch and the weather was, I think to sort of, you know, almost, you know, excuse how poor a game it was because of the conditions, to then kind of turn that round and pinpoint a player and say they played poorly, I think, you know, is a little unfair. I think I'm happy to kind of almost scrub yesterday's performance because of the weather and move forward. And if we're moving forward, I think Curtis Main is still, you know, the first choice for me up front. I do agree, I would like to see James Scott more. I think it's important to see him more, particularly as Scott said earlier, you know, you don't want him to, you know, the negative impact of over what happened at Celtic. And I think one of the best ways to kind of get past that is to get more minutes, to get on the park, hopefully, you know, maybe chip in with a goal here or there. But for me, Curtis Main is still, you know, it's still his position up front. I think he's one of those players that I think, particularly recently, and particularly because he doesn't score as many goals, has become, you know, someone that fans can kind of point at and say, oh, he's no good enough. But for me, I don't think he did a lot wrong in the six games that we won. And I'm certainly not going to, you know, start calling for him to be dropped based on a performance in a game that we've already agreed was absolutely atrocious conditions on an absolutely atrocious pitch.
Buster, an interesting one in terms of how far Danny Johnson seems to have fallen out of the picture. I should mention James Scott, Ross McCormack, Connor Salmon. But Danny Johnson, in the later part of 2019, came in. He obviously got a double against Aberdeen. He scored a great goal against Celtic, the equalising goal in that game. But kind of coinciding with our good run of form, Danny Johnson hasn't been in the team. And he seems to be quite far out of the reckoning as well now.
I think that's due to the way we play. You know, again, you mentioned the players that we have other than him, but I don't think... And I think we did try it once or twice. I don't think Danny Johnson can play up front himself. He seems to be a bit of a goal-getter, whereas I agree with what Jay said regarding Curtis Main. I don't think he's played badly at all. He's not got as many goals as you'd like your striker to get, probably. But I think he's played really well in some of the games, despite not getting a goal or two. But I don't think Danny Johnson could do that role. Connor Salmon is a big unit. You'd expect him to be able to hold the ball up, you know, play that role as well. So that's again why you were thinking he was in your thoughts when you were talking about our strikers. The issue with me, and again, just taking it back a couple of conversations there with Ross McCormick. When he came in, everybody was delighted. But as you said, he's became a bit of a second and afterthought now, because you know the Hasty, Turnbull, you know Alan Campbell, Goran Rodriguez. These guys have, well, except for Turnbull, these guys have come in really sort of after the sort of Christmas break, and you know lit the place up. So the fact that Ross McCormick turned up, looked about the same weight as me, and was about as fast as me, in his one or two games that he's made an appearance, has been forgotten. You know, everybody was thinking this guy's going to turn it around for us. We've nothing really to play for at this point, but it'll be good to get a bit of excitement on the park. And it's not been him that's provided that so far. And when it comes to a point where he is fit enough, it's blatantly obvious he'll still have some ability. So he could probably easily be the best player in that team. But where does he then play? Because I don't think he could play up front himself. I don't think that would be his role. It would probably then involve, as he's come on as a sub a couple of times, for maybe Aribe or Hasty, and him playing a sort of an inside forwards role rather than an out-and-out winger that you get sort of with Aribe, for example. So it would be a nice problem to have whenever he gets fit again. As you say, I think he's got some sort of knock or something at the moment. But again, there's me. We started talking about Danny Johnson and effectively I've immediately dismissed him. He can't play that role. How do we fit Ross McCormick in there? So, as you said there, he might be our top goal scorer, but I don't see him getting much game time considering the way we play at the moment.
Scott, is there a danger that Ross McCormick becomes the forgotten man in the sense that he's got a knock just now? There's only five games until the split. Obviously, five games following the split. It's very, very unlikely in the wages that Ross McCormick's on Aston Villa that he's ever going to end up at Motherwell on a permanent basis. Is it to the detriment of guys like James Scott playing Ross McCormick? Should he actually get himself fit in the first place?
I wouldn't say that if Ross was to play, it would be to the detriment of James Scott. I think having somebody of his quality and his experience in and around the club is something that James and a lot of the other younger players will be learning from. And to learn from them, you need to see them in action. It's one thing watching them in the training ground, but I think if he gets himself back, I'm not sure what the problem is. Something tells me it's a knee problem that he has. I might be wrong in that. But once he gets himself back fit, I think he can play a part. There's still enough time to go. And in terms of Motherwell being able to afford him in a permanent deal, I believe he's got just over a year left in his Aston Villa contract. But I did an interview with him about a month ago, and he was quite open about how he felt that his time at Aston Villa was over and that he didn't really want to go back to English football, which tells me that money's not everything. And I think he would be keen to just enjoy his football at the stage of the career he's at. I think Ross is 31, 32, something like that. Probably made his money and similar to what James McFadden did, to come back up the road and just enjoy playing football again. And undoubtedly, there's a brilliant footballer in there. By all accounts, he said it himself, he's a better footballer now than he was when he was at Motherwell 10 years ago. And I think it's just a matter of him getting back up to speed and getting a bit of form back and maybe getting a goal and getting in about it. Because from memory, any time he's played for Motherwell since he came back up, he's not been getting played as a striker. He's been getting played out wide in the left or coming on as a substitute whenever Motherwell have either been holding on to a lead and just trying to see a game out. He's not really, barring maybe the 45 minutes against Ross County when he obviously wasn't fit enough, he's not really had a chance to show what he's all about. So I think you will see that over the course of the season. But no, I wouldn't say that's to the detriment of the young players that are there. I think it's more to the benefit of it that they'll get to work with somebody like Ross who has done well down in England, has gone for ridiculous amounts of money. Ridiculous as in the sum, not that he's not deserving of it, but just it's a lot of money, I think 10, 12 million pound transfers, played for his country, scored goals in the Champions League. Whatever way he is, whatever use he can be to the players, it's a benefit to have him there, undoubtedly.
Guys, we're pretty much there for this week, but Scott, I'll finish off finally by thanking you for your time this evening.
Not and at all.
Since the last time we had you on, you've obviously moved over roles as well. How is life at the BBC treating you?
It does seem every time you guys have me on, I've changed job. I don't know where I'll be the next time you speak to me. It's good. I've been at the BBC now for 8 months, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Everybody that I work with has been very welcoming, and it's nice to be in an organisation that's ambitious and looking to build and cover Scottish football the way it does. And it's nice to be away from the stresses and strains of that comes with working for a newspaper. Although I do miss it, and I do miss the people. I've been enjoying things over the last 8 months, and it's nice to try and branch out a little bit and do different things. I primarily deal with BBC Sports Scotland Online, and we've seen the website take strides over the last kind of 7 or 8 months, and hopefully people have noticed that the tone of the site has maybe changed a little bit. I've been enjoying it so far, and quite excited by various other things that we've got in the pipeline as well.
Jay, Buster, thank you very much, guys.
Cheers.
No worries, guys. Thank yous.
Thank yous too. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.